Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarane Trinadapi Sunichena Tarar Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sada Hari Harinama 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 Eva Kevalam Kalau Nastyeva 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 Gatir Anyata Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare The Mahabharata, The Greater History of India Part 1 Chapter 6 The Kauravas' Hatred Grows It was night, now time for the princes to leave Drona's school. To complete their training, they had to pay their guru's fees by offering him dakshina. Traditionally, the dakshina was determined by the guru himself. Drona assembled the princes and said, "There is only one thing I want. You should take King Drupada prisoner. Then bring him before me as your captive." The princes replied, "So be it." They knew of their guru's enmity with the king. Drupada and Drona had lived together as children under the rishi Agnivesha. Drupada had promised that when he inherited the kingdom, he would bestow half of it onto his dear friend, Drona. Later, when they had both grown to maturity, Drona went to Drupada and reminded him of their friendship and also the promise. Seeing the poor Drona standing before him, Drupada said, "O luckless Brahmana, how do you consider me your friend now? Past friendships are meaningless. Only equals can be friends. I am a great king, and you are an indigent Brahmin. Do not try to invoke a long-dead relationship." Drupada laughed at Drona and offered him a little charity. Deeply insulted, Drona left Panchal, Drupada's vast kingdom, but his mind was fixed on revenge. The time for that revenge had now arrived. Dronacharya looked about at his accomplished students and knew that Drupada would now soon regret his arrogance. The princes mounted their chariots and sped toward Panchal. Accompanied by a large force of horsemen, they soon arrived at Drupada's capital, Kampilya. Duryodhana and his brothers vied with one another to lead the attack. They rushed toward the city gates with weapons raised. Sending up cries, they burst into Kampilya along its main highway, while the terrified citizens hid in their houses. Outside the city, Dronacharya waited with the Pandavas. Arjuna had suggested to his brothers that they not accompany the Kauravas. "They will not be able to overpower the mighty Drupada," Arjuna said. We should make our attack after theirs has been repulsed. Drupada heard the attacking Kauravas crashing through his city and came straight out of his palace, mounted on his huge white chariot. Roaring with joy at the chance for battle, he charged at the head of his army to defend the city. He showered his enemies with forceful arrows. His speed and lightness of motion were such that the Kauravas thought they were facing many Drupadas. He careered fearlessly in his chariot and entered into their midst, his bow constantly drawn to a circle and his searing shafts flying in all directions. The Panchalas sounded thousands of conch shells, trumpets, and drums, creating a noise that sounded like the roar of a tremendous lion. Drupada struck the Kuru princes with his arrows and sent them reeling. Seeing their king in the forefront of battle, the citizens came out of their houses to hurl clubs, maces, and other missiles at the Kurus. The princes were surrounded by thousands of assailants, and they felt oppressed and overwhelmed. They fled howling from the city with the Panchalas in pursuit. The Pandavas laughed. Arjuna said scornfully to Yudhishthira, "Here come the proud Kauravas, put to flight by Drupad. They are strong in words only. It is time for us to fight. You stay here. I shall go with the others." Yudhishthira remained behind with Dronacharya. His four brothers fled toward Kampilya. Bhima bounded along with mace held aloft, while Arjuna raced behind him on a chariot with Nakula and Sahadeva on either side. The Panchalas were waiting for them and had blocked the city gates with a row of elephants. Bhima struck at them with his club. With their heads smashed and covered in blood, the elephants fell to the ground like cliffs broken off by thunderbolts. Bhima spun like a furious tornado amid the Panchala warriors. Elephants, chariots, and infantrymen fell in the thousands. The Pandavas drove the hostile force back as herdsmen drive cattle. Arjuna, keen to please his preceptor, released volleys of arrows at the immense Panchala forces. His straight flying shafts came in an endless stream and sped flawlessly at the enemy warriors. Arjuna resembled the all-devouring fire that appears at the end of an aeon. Protected on either side by his two brothers, he felled thousands of fighters. Drupada raced to the head of his troops, and they rallied with lion-like roars. Led by their king, they mounted a powerful counter-attack against the Pandavas. Arrows, darts, spears, and clubs rained down on the four brothers. Arjuna repelled all the missiles with his arrows. The Panchalas enraged him with their furious attack and fought with redoubled energy. His foes could not mark any interval between his pulling an arrow from his quiver and bending his bow to fire it. All they saw was a constant stream of shafts speeding toward them. The mighty Panchal warriors shouted praises at Arjuna for his prowess. Along with his commander-in-chief Satyajit, Jupiter personally rushed toward Arjuna. Like a king, Satyajit was a warrior capable of contending with thousands of other warriors at once. He struck Arjuna with 100 fierce arrows and sent up a great war. Not tolerating the attack, Arjuna pierced Satyajit with 10 arrows and simultaneously cut his bow to pieces with 3 more shafts. Seeing this wonderful feat, the other warriors cheered. Satyajit grasped another bow and immediately pierced Arjuna's steeds as well as his chariot. Arjuna again split Satyajit's bow. Then he killed his horses and smashed his chariot to pieces. Jupiter came quickly to his commander's assistance. A powerful exchange of arrows and other missiles followed between the king and Arjuna. Gradually, Arjuna overpowered Jupiter. He shattered the king's bow, tore off his armor, felled his flagstaff, and killed his horses. Seeing Jupiter confounded, Arjuna threw down his own bow and took up a huge scimitar. He leapt down from his chariot and jumped onto Jupiter, seizing him and holding the sword to his throat. Bhima had meanwhile been wreaking havoc among Jupiter's troops. Arjuna shouted to him to withdraw. They had achieved their aim and captured Jupiter. The troops saw their king's plight and fled in fear. Arjuna then dragged Jupiter onto his own chariot and rode back with Dronacharya. When Drona saw the captive king, he smiled. "So, O mighty king, do you now desire to revive our old friendship? It seems that your kingdom and wealth have now become mine." Jupiter squirmed and blushed. He looked down as Drona continued. "You need not fear for your life, for I am a Brahmana. It is my duty to be ever forgiving. Indeed, I have always cherished an affection for you since we were children." Drona then ordered Arjuna to release Jupiter. The king listened in silence as Drona continued. "I still desire your friendship, but how can one who is not a king be a king's friend? Therefore, I have decided to allow you to keep one half of your kingdom, Jupiter, and I shall take the other half." Jupiter was in no position to argue. He knew that Drona's martial power far exceeded his own, especially as he now had the mighty Kurus as disciples. There would be no question of defeating him in battle. Jupiter then nodded in assent. "You are truly noble to act in this way, Drona. Great personalities like yourself are always magnanimous. I too desire your friendship. Let us live peacefully, each ruling his own half of the Panchal kingdom." Jupiter had Brahmanas perform appropriate rituals and bestowed the northern half of his kingdom upon Dronacharya, who then left with the Pandavas for Hastinapur. Jupiter burned with humiliation. Somehow, he had to avenge his honor. Absorbed in thought, the king returned to his palace. As they returned to Hastinapur, Drona rode on Arjuna's chariot and spoke to him affectionately. He loved this prince as dearly as his own son, and he knew there was nothing Arjuna would not do for him. Drona said, "O hero, you are now the best of all bowmen in this world. Although you have repaid me by defeating Drupada, I will ask one more thing from you as Dakshina. You must fight with me when I come to fight with you." Arjuna was surprised. How could he ever fight with his teacher? Still, he replied without hesitating, "It shall be so. I am always your servant." The Kurus had heard of a wonderful occurrence in Mathura, the city where Kunti had been born. Kunti had a brother named Vasudeva, who had been imprisoned by the wicked King Kansa. This powerful monarch had been viciously terrorizing Brahmins and other kings. Hearing a divine prophecy that Vasudeva's eighth child would kill him, Kansa imprisoned both Vasudeva and his wife Devaki. He then killed their first six children at birth. But somehow, despite Kansa's vigilance, the seventh and eighth children, Balaram and Krishna, had escaped death. By some mystical arrangement, Krishna had been carried away from Mathura and raised in Vrindavan, a small village of cowherd people. And it was led by their leader, Nanda Maharaj. The great Rishi said that Krishna was in fact the Supreme Lord, and that it had been by his own divine arrangement that he had gone to Vrindavan. The Kurus were amazed to hear from the sages that God himself had appeared in the neighboring kingdom of the Yadus. When he became a youth, Krishna had returned to Mathura and killed Kansa with his bare hands. This tremendous deed astonished all those who saw it and confirmed for them Krishna's divine identity. Kansa had struck fear even into the demigods' hearts. There had been no earthly king capable of standing against him. But this young Krishna, still only a boy, and his brother Balaram, had overpowered Kansa's troops and generals, finally killing the king along with his evil ministers. The two brothers, Krishna and Balaram, then became chiefs of the Yadu dynasty. They maintained a friendship with the Kurus in Hastinapur, taking special interest in the welfare of their aunt Kunti and her five fatherless sons. Balaram, also said by the Rishis to be a manifestation of the Supreme Godhead, became famous as a peerless mace fighter. At Drona's request, Balaram agreed to train Bhima and Duryodhana in the skills of handling a mace. Thus Balaram spent time in Hastinapur. While there, Balaram learned of the fierce rivalry and envy the Kauravas felt toward their cousins. And when Krishna heard this, he became concerned for Kunti and her sons. Therefore, he asked one of his advisors, Akrura, to visit Hastinapur and assess the situation, and to see if he could be of any help. The Kurus received Akrura in friendship. Kunti was overjoyed to see him. She inquired about her kinsmen and friends in Mathura. Kunti especially wanted to know everything about Krishna, whom she accepted as the Supreme Lord. "Does my nephew Krishna think of me and my sons? Does he know how I am suffering in the midst of my enemies, like a doe in the midst of wolves?" Akrura asked her to tell him more about the situation in the city, and she began explaining everything. Kunti knew that Duryodhana and his brothers were always intriguing against her sons. The Kauravas could not tolerate the Pandavas' superior prowess. The humiliation they had recently received at Kampilya had made them even more keen to dispose of Pandu's sons. Kunti spoke with Akrura, and she had tears in her eyes. "Will Krishna come here to console me? I always pray to that all-powerful protector of the universe. Indeed, I see no other shelter for myself and my sons." Kunti cried out to Krishna in front of Akrura. He gently reassured her that Krishna was often speaking about her and had sent him to analyze the situation. Both Akrura and Vidura comforted Kunti and reminded her about her son's extraordinary birth. The Pandava boys were expansions of demigods. There was no way that the evil Kaurava princes could overcome them. Akrura remained in Hastinapur for several months. Then, when he felt he had understood the situation fully, he decided it was time to return to Mathura. But before leaving, he met with Dhritarashtra to offer some advice. Ultimately, the blind king was responsible for his son's acts, and he could certainly check their behavior if he chose to. Akrura then said, "My dear king, you have obtained the throne only because your brother Pandu passed away prematurely. Therefore, Pandu's sons have first claim on the throne. You should not discriminate against them in favor of your own sons." Akrura also advised Dhritarashtra to rule the kingdom strictly according to moral principles. He should treat all his subjects equally, what to speak of the Pandavas, his own nephews and heirs to the throne. Over-attachment for one's close relatives is simply born of ignorance. Every creature in the world is born alone and dies alone. Everyone experiences the results of his or her own good and evil deeds, and in the end leaves the present body to accept yet another. The belief that one person is the relation of another is nothing more than illusion. Dhritarashtra listened in silence as Akrura spoke. He understood the implication of his words. Akura had made it clear that the Pandavas' cause was righteous, and that by opposing them, Dhritarashtra would reap only grief. Dhritarashtra bowed his head as Akura concluded. By favoring your own sons, O Lord of the earth, you are acting out of ignorance. How then can you hope for any good result? Ignorance always leads to sorrow. Therefore, act virtuously and deal with Pandu's sons as they rightfully deserve. Dhritarashtra sighed. O wise one, your words are like the immortal nectar of the demigods. I could go on hearing them forever. You have surely spoken the truth. But just as a person on the verge of death cannot be saved by nectar, so also your instructions do not stay in my heart. Dhritarashtra admitted that he was prejudiced by affection for his sons. He told Akura that he felt helpless to overcome that affection. Like Kunti, the king also understood Krishna's unique position. Surely, everything moves according to the will of the Supreme Lord. No man can influence the Lord's will. Now he has appeared to relieve the earth's burden, and that will surely happen. What then can I do? Destiny is surely all-powerful. Dhritarashtra had heard the sages describe how Krishna's mission was to destroy the large number of demoniac kings who had begun to populate the earth. Pandu had managed to check them, but since his retirement, they had formed alliances and had built huge armies, posing a constant threat to world security. Akura could understand that Dhritarashtra was set upon a course that would lead to his ruin. By favoring his own sons over the Pandavas, the king would ultimately ignite a conflict between them, which would result in the destruction of the Kuru race. Akura felt there was nothing more he could do. Dhritarashtra refused to accept responsibility for his acts. Taking his leave from the king, Akura made his way back to Mathura. When Akura was gone, Dhritarashtra pondered on his words. It was true that Pandu's sons were the rightful heirs to the kingdom. That could not be denied. It was especially clear that the eldest of them, Yudhishthira, was qualified to be the king. The king had seen how the prince was noted for his honesty, patience, kindness, and unswerving adherence to duty. Along with his brothers, he was a firm favorite of the people. The citizens had loved Pandu, and it seemed to them that he returned to live with them as his sons. Everywhere people were speaking of their desire to see Yudhishthira installed as the king. Dhritarashtra had heard of their talks. The people said, "Now we have a qualified prince. Why should the blind Dhritarashtra remain king? Let us place the pious Yudhishthira on the throne. He will surely be a righteous and benevolent ruler." Dhritarashtra consulted with Bhishma, Vidura, and the Brahmins. They all decided that Yudhishthir should be installed as prince regent. The ceremony was soon performed, and the people rejoiced. Duryodhana, however, was seething. How had his father bypassed him to make Yudhishthir prince regent? When Bhima sneered at his distress, making it even more unbearable, Duryodhan went with Karna and Dushasana to discuss with Shakuni a way to eradicate the Pandavas. Shakuni's eyes narrowed, and Duryodhana and the others vented their rage. He pressed his fingertips together to think. The only answer is to get the Pandavas out of Hastinapur to a place where they can be killed without interference. We should somehow contrive to have them burned to death, making it seem like an accident. Duryodhan smiled, but Karna was not so sure. He did not like Shakuni's devious ways. Only cowards resort to deceit and underhanded methods. Powerful men favor open combat. If the Pandavas are our enemies, then let us march out to the battlefield and settle this dispute. Shakuni's lips tightened, and then he smiled slightly. My child, you are powerful, but foolish. It seems you have forgotten Bhima's superhuman strength. And do you not remember the incident at Kampilya? All of the Kaurava princes with you by their side could not overpower Jupiter. But with only four persons fighting, the Pandavas were successful. It is unlikely that we will win in a confrontation with those five brothers. Take heed of my words. Reminded of Kampilya, Karna was embarrassed. He let out an angry shout. They had been taken by surprise. Drupada had been stronger than they had expected. The Pandavas had the advantage, confronting Drupada after having witnessed his actual power. Next time, if the Pandavas confronted the Kauravas directly, things would be different. Karna shook his head and left the room. Do what you will, but I cannot be a party to such cowardice. The cunning Shakuni had carefully assessed the situation. He pressed Duryodhana to approach his father and ask for the Pandavas to be sent away. He knew that Dhritarashtra would not refuse his son anything. Duryodhan nodded slowly. He trusted Shakuni's judgment. Together they worked out the details of their plan. Then Duryodhan went to see the king. Dhritarashtra knew well of his son's hatred for the Pandavas. He knew that Yudhishthir's insulation as the heir apparent had been a bitter blow to Duryodhan. The king thought about what he could do for his sons. He had spoken with Shakuni. His brother-in-law, knowing that Dhritarashtra never acted without counsel, had suggested that he seek advice from Shakuni's Brahmin friend, Kanika. This Brahmin, Shakuni said, was an expert in statecraft and politics. Shakuni then personally brought Kanika to see Dhritarashtra. Kanika told Dhritarashtra that he should feel no compunction, no remorse about rooting out his enemies before they harmed him. If he saw the Pandavas as enemies, then he should destroy them without hesitation by any means possible. Because they were stronger than his own sons, a direct confrontation would probably fail. Better to employ some devious means. In the meantime, the king should continue to appear as the Pandavas' well-wisher. Then, as soon as an opportunity arose, he should strike. Dhritarashtra thanked the Brahmin for his advice and dismissed him. He sat alone in his chamber for some time. The thought of killing Pandu's sons distressed him. Perhaps there was some way they could be removed from Hastinapur. While they were present, his own sons would never be happy. Duryodhan complained constantly about his cousins. Now the monarchy was about to pass back to Pandu's line. Dhritarashtra had enjoyed his opportunity to occupy Hastinapur's throne as the world emperor. Although the firstborn son, and thus the first in line for the throne, he had thought his blindness had forever denied him the chance to be king. But in the years since Pandu's departure, he had been accustomed to holding the reins of power. It would not be easy to let go. As Dhritarashtra sat in his darkened room, Duryodhan came to see him. He heard his son's heavy steps approaching and his sighs as he sat before him. Dhritarashtra gently greeted the prince and asked what assailed him. "I am hearing ill news of the kingdom, father. The citizens are growing restless. They want you to soon hand over the throne to the Pandavas. They are saying, 'Why should we have the blind king now that Yudhishthira is grown?' These are the words they utter. They care not for you or for myself." Duryodhan stood up sharply and began to pace, his gold ornaments jangling. As he strode about, he punched his hand with his clenched fist. "Soon we shall become dependent upon the Pandavas. They will be the kings, and after them their sons will inherit the throne. Thus our line will be plunged into misfortune. We shall become powerless and lose the honor which we have long enjoyed. What could be more painful for us? I have been considering how to deliver us. Listen as I explain my idea." Duryodhan first suggested that the Pandavas be sent to a distant city. On the pretext of sending them on the holiday, they could be sent to Varnavat, where a splendid festival honoring Lord Shiva would soon be celebrated. The town was noted for its attractions. The Pandavas would surely be pleased to visit it. Once they left Hastinapur, perhaps they would never return. Dhritarashtra immediately understood what was on his son's mind. How could he possibly agree? Dhritarashtra said, "Pandu was always devoted to virtue. He did not care for wealth. My pious brother was devoted to me. He gave me everything, including this wide and prosperous kingdom. How could I hurt his sons? Besides that consideration, The people love the Pandavas, Dhritarashtra said. The people would be angered if the Kurus sent them away. Perhaps they would rise up against their leaders and remove them by force. And certainly Bhishma and the other senior Kurus would favor the Pandavas. Duryodhan was ready for this objection. Before sending the Pandavas away, the Kurus should try to win over the people by various means. By bestowing wealth and honors on them, they would gain their love and trust. Then, in the Pandavas' absence, it would be possible for Duryodhan to become the king. The prince spoke on. Once my position is established in Hastinapur, Kunti and her sons could even return. I do not fear for their welfare. Dhritarashtra sat up and leaned toward his son. This very thought has been on my mind, but I have not spoken of it because it is a sinful thought. I am still doubtful. How do you propose that we deal with Bhishma, Vidura, Drona, and Kripa? They love the Pandavas as if their own sons. Duryodhan smiled. Bhishma will remain neutral as he always does. Drona's son is my staunch supporter. His father will never go against him. Drona has married Kripa's sister. Therefore, Kripa's support is assured. Vidura is the only one we cannot trust. He will certainly side with the Pandavas. But what harm can he alone do to us? Duryodhan implored his father to agree. If the Pandavas were allowed to remain in Hastinapur, he would not be able to live. His heart was burning, and he lived in constant anxiety. Dhritarashtra was torn. He sat sighing for some moments. Finally, he gave his assent. Everything lay in the hands of Providence. What could he, a mere mortal, filled with desire and fears, what could he do against destiny? The king called for his servants and retired for the night.